Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Hello, everyone, from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson, and you're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on the Around the World Network of Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, everybody. Thank you very much for tuning in. Handling the technical responsibilities tonight all the way from the state of Pennsylvania, Eric Altman's along, and he'll be manning the chat room as well as monitoring the phone calls that might come in. And, of course, as always, in the massive studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, charge of the Wild World News, Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Batson.
Hey, fall is here in Indiana. We're very excited. The trees are absolutely exquisite. They're starting to change color. And, of course, in my area here in west central Indiana, we're preparing for the Covered Bridge Festival, an event that will attract over a million visitors to this part of the state as they go through antiques and various wares that vendors have to sell that will cover miles and miles and miles and miles. And it's quite an event. It'll be going on for 10 days, so we're all excited about that. So what's in your world, Doctor?
Well, everything's pretty good here. We're pretty happy about the weather. It's calmed down a little bit, although we're going to set a record this weekend, I guess. We're going to be in the 80s again.
Yes, we
are. Can't do any harm to the grass.
No, the grass is already, we've been experiencing quite a drought here. Not much rain at all. The grass is all brown, and we could use a few sprinkles. We had that last week, but it was just enough to tease the vegetation and nothing serious. But we're anticipating winter. In fact, I have to tell you the truth. I've seen white woolly worms. And I don't know what that means. I know the black ones tell us that there might be a very snow-filled winter. So maybe the white ones will tell us that we will not have that much snow, and that would not break my heart, what's the least. We want to tell everybody, tonight's guest, oh, we're so excited, all the way from Bastrop, Texas, Bob Long's here. He's a Texas rancher that has devoted his property and his life in the last few years to a very rare and endangered species called the Houston toad. And he's got quite a story to tell everyone. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Program he's been involved with, and it's quite interesting. I found out about Bob through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services magazine, and as soon as I called him, I thought, man, we have to have this gentleman on the program. He's here tonight. We'll be talking to him from his ranch in Texas. And as always, bringing the Wild World News is Dr. Henry Day, and we want to tell everyone. It's underwritten by Jet Kaiser Films. If you're preparing to film a documentary or anything for your company, a big event, contact Jed Kaiser. It's all HD. He's an artist, quite a cinematographer, and his website at jedkaiserfilms.com. And he's been so kind to underwrite the Larry Batson's Wild World News with Dr. Henry Day. What you got tonight, Doctor?
Well, tonight we're going to start off in Florence, Alabama. It's been a pretty scary year for the bats, and it's the Halloween month, and it's still a scary one for the bats this month. The Department of Conservation and Natural Resources wildlife biologist Keith Hudson will travel around the state looking for signs of the white nose syndrome. And as our listeners know, we've been reporting on this for several months. It's a fungal disease that is blamed for the massive number of bat deaths from New England to eastern Tennessee. Hudson suspects that a lot of the bats will be sickened, and then they'll congregate to hibernate for the winter, which will sicken more bats. And
people don't
realize that bats pollinate a lot of our flowers and plants, and they also control the insect population. When we start losing bats, it's a bad thing.
Well, true, and a colony of bats will consume about 2,000 pounds of mosquitoes in a season. And that's a lot of mosquitoes. So imagine 1 ton. So, yes, we hope they get that figured out. And, you know, Mother Nature has what strange ways of dealing with certain things that we are not always aware of, but we hope they solve this situation.
Yeah, maybe it's one of those things where they need to build up a tolerance.
Yeah.
And then everything will be okay.
Yeah, we hope.
All right. Well, in honor of St. Francis of Assisi, the blessing of the animal service took place on Monday in Denver. Dozens of pets and their owners attended the ceremony, which is held on the feast day of the St. Francis of Assisi, the patron saint of animals.
So what's involved with the service? They bless all the pets, huh?
They bless all the pets.
I do that every day as I look out over our compound. Bless them and feed them and water them. That's fantastic, you know. Great.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know. All right, well, Canada and the United States, they're going to unite to battle the Asian carp. Canadian U.S. scientists announced the launch of a joint study that will look into the likelihood that the Asian carp will spread across the Great Lakes and decimate the fish populations there. An 18-month study will be the first joint effort by the two nations to evaluate the possible consequences of an invasion by the bighead and silver carp, which are Asian species, threatening to enter Lake Michigan through the Chicago area waterways.
You know, those lakes have had lots of problems over the years. You know, years ago they had to deal with the lamprey, which was it's a fish-like animal that basically attaches itself to native fish and just sucks the life out of them. But I think in the last few years, I haven't kept up to date on that situation, but I think they've monitored it very well and controlled it.
Yeah, they've pretty much gotten the lampreys under control there now.
Yeah, yeah. But hopefully.
All right, well, while we're talking about Canada, let's talk about, you like Canadian bacon?
Well, I do like Canadian bacon.
Well,
especially with a nice ripened tomato and a little lettuce and a good slug of mayonnaise.
Well, the firefighters and police and animal protection workers corralled dozens of pigs Monday after a tractor trailer carrying about 250 swine rolled over on a highway in Toronto. None of the pigs were injured.
Well, they weren't injured. So why did you ask if I like Canadian? Oh, my Lord. Okay.
All right. Rawlings, Wyoming. The U.S. Bureau of Land Management plans to begin gathering wild horses from two areas in the southern part of the state. The Bureau of Land Management will gather and remove approximately 15,000 horses from two herd management areas near Rock Springs and Rawlings. And they plan to treat about 100 of the mares with a fertility control vaccine.
That's a good idea. You know, they have the adoption programs for a lot of those horses, and they and their people have the opportunity to adopt them all over the country. So
yeah, that's a great idea.
Yes, it is.
All right, Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Biologists said they are concerned about the future of what has been a world-class smallmouth bass fishery in the silt-filled river below the failed dam at Lake Delhi. Since July, there has been about 6 inches a month that's covering the river due to the dam failure there.
Ooh. Well,
and if you're a fisherman, those smallmouth bass are very important.
Well, they are, and plus, you know, they're quite the trophy and darn right tasty every once in a while, too.
Quite tasty.
You know, we got into those. We went up to Minnesota a couple, 3 years ago, and we had quite a good time catching those smallmouth bass. And I can remember as a youngster fishing in the streams here in Indiana, that was the fish we were after. So I hope that situation changes. Okay.
All right. Well, off to Providence, Rhode Island, while we're fishing. Well, officials broke ground on fish ladders aimed at helping herring return to their spawning grounds. Members of the state's congressional delegation attended Tuesday's groundbreaking at the Hunts Mill Dam in East Providence. The $4.8 million project will involve creating concrete ladders for herring and shad to migrate upstream.
Well, what about that?
And concrete ladders.
That's right. I wonder how much that program cost. Do they have any figures
there? Well, maybe about $4.8 million.
Oh, well, there we go. Okay. God bless the herrings.
Bend, Oregon.
No.
The State Fish and Wildlife Commission is reevaluating the state's wolf management plan. In the original plan, ranchers could get permits to harass wolves after the animals caused problems with their livestock after a 48-hour period. Now the commission is changing the guidelines so that any wolf-wildlife conflict is enough for a permit.
Okay.
We're harassing wolves again.
Well, I don't want to start on that because if we do start on it, I'll run into Bob's time, and I don't want to get over there tonight, so I'm not going.
That's right.
That's right.
And I'm pretty excited. I'm a big amphibian fan. I love all the amphibians, so I'm excited about tonight's show.
Yes, I know. We've got a great guest tonight.
All right. Well, let's head off. How about some local news?
Well, how about some local news?
An Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Officer department car was damaged when a horse in the city's mounted patrol kicked in the left headlight and then defecated on the hood. Now, Baker is the name of the horse. Now, Baker is a mounted unit cared for by IMPD officer Stephen Goreski. He was working downtown on Saturday night when the animal damaged the 2009 Ford Crown Victoria police car at the corner of Illinois and Maryland Streets. Now, Officer Jeffrey Taylor reported the incident, and an evidence technician was called out to photograph the damage. And no disciplinary action will be taken against Baker the horse.
I would like to be in on the report that is sent to the insurance company.
Yeah.
That's funny. I hadn't heard that. That's funny.
All right. Now, this isn't normally how we end up the animal news tonight, but I wanted to let everybody know that this Saturday is John Lennon's birthday.
Yes.
And if he would have lived, he would have been 70 years old. Now, they're planning the biggest birthday bash for him to date. There are a lot of things going on. Let me tell you about a couple of them. After performing in New York and Los Angeles, Yoko Ono takes the Plastic Ono Band, directed by son Sean, to Iceland for a concert on Saturday. She'll also bestow the annual Lennon Ono Grant for Peace on four recipients before lighting the Imagine Peace Tower on Viennese Island. And you can view this live during ImagePeace.com, on ImagePeace.com. Also, Lennon's son Julian and Lennon's first wife Cynthia will unveil an 18-foot global Image Peace and Harmony monument Saturday in Liverpool, which is John's birthplace.
Right, right. Well, he was behind Peace and Love, and Yoko Ono is behind raising as much money as she can over her late husband. That's all I'll say. But I'm sure it's all good intentions.
And that's enough. But happy birthday, John, on Saturday.
Absolutely.
Well, that's the animal news for tonight.
We'd like to thank Dr. Henry Day for the animal news, and also JetKaiserFilms.com. Go to their website, and they will show you all the masterful cinematography pieces that they've put together over the last four short years that this artist has been doing this fantastic photography work. So check it out, Jet Kaiser Films. They are the underwriter for the Wild World News. We'd also like to thank We Want You Cottages way up in western New York, Peter and Kathy Weimer. What a place they have up there. But more than that, they have a very exciting new website called iKids Fishing, where youngsters from all across the country can download that picture of that big whopper they caught this past season and compare it to youngsters all over North America. That's at We Want You Cottages, WEWANCHU.com. Also, a big thank you to McGregor Mountain Lodge in scenic Estes Park, Colorado. That's God's country, everybody. If you've never been out west, you owe it to yourself to see the magnificent Rockies and want a great place to stay right on the boundaries of Rocky Mountain National Park. Let me give you that website. It's info@McGregorMountainLodge.com. Or how about that 800 number, 1-800-835-8439. Also, a big thank you to Santee Cooper Country in beautiful South Carolina. Lake Marion and Lake Moultrie, known as Santee Cooper Lakes, they cover 171,000 acres, 450 miles of shoreline, known for world-class fishing. Folks, those waters hold 7 state records and 1 world record. Here's that website, www.santeecoopercountry.org, or give the girls a call. They'll arrange your entire trip, get your guides and your motel and where to eat and where to have fun in Santee, South Carolina. That 800 number is 1-800-227-8510. And also a big thank you to Scobie Custom Meats and Maple Syrup right here in Putnam County. They're fantastic underwriters of this program. Here's that number, 765-653-7119. And that's Scobie Custom Meats right here in West Central Indiana. In 2002, Bob Long, as he puts it, he says he's a gun-toting Republican redneck preacher, got involved with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's Safe Harbor program. The program features legal assurances that land management restrictions will not be imposed on private landowners should these landowners partake in conservation measures to protect endangered species. And for Bob Long, way down there in Bastrop, Texas, the animal he wanted to bring back from the brink of extinction was a little guy called the Houston Toad. And we'd like to welcome him here tonight on Larry Batson's Wild World. Good evening, Bob.
Good evening.
So how's the weather down there in Texas?
It's really been remarkably good for Texas. We've had 80-degree days and down in the 50s at night and beautiful sunshine. We could use a little rain, too. I heard you talking about the need for rain.
Oh,
but I've got to get the rest of my hay in tomorrow, but that won't take too long.
So how many acres of hay do you do each year?
Well, I don't do it every year. We have to have rain.
Oh, well, yeah.
If it rains real good, we do enough for our herd, which has been reduced because of the practices we put in to help the Houston Toad, but we never made that much money off cattle anyway. It's just kind of a family heritage.
Well, let's start from the very beginning. You have 500-some acres down there in Texas. And let's start from the very beginning how this all came about, that you were involved with preserving and bringing back from the brink of extinction this little amphibian known as the Houston Toad.
Well, of course, it's called the Houston Toad, but it lives up here in Bastrop, over 100 miles from Houston. I guess Houston's mostly concrete, so I guess it had to leave town and come up here where we still have some country left. And the scientists say it likes our pine trees we have up here and small ponds of water. And they're still trying to figure out, you know, what it really likes, because it's a nocturnal creature and you have to go out at night to look at it, and the only way you can find it is to hear it calling in breeding season when the males holler for the females. And but we have some of those calling males out at our ranch on Allen Creek. So we know we have some. And
uh-huh.
the point was that a few years back, U.S. Fish and Wildlife came to town, and down here in Texas, we don't really like government telling us what to do, especially the federal government.
Right.
I guess we can be honest. And so they said that if we didn't take care of the Houston Toad, that they would call Jeopardy. And I thought that was a quiz show, but what it meant was they wouldn't give any money for our schools and our roads and other things because we didn't take care of the toad. And that kind of started a contentious relationship with U.S. Fish and Wildlife. That was our first meeting. And by the way, just in case somebody tunes out, over the years we've built a much better relationship. But that was the beginning. And I wasn't at that meeting, but my son was. He kind of got contentious, but the sheriff kept him from doing anything. Go ahead.
So he was at the meeting, and how many folks attended that meeting, and how angry did that crowd get after they heard these words?
Well, you've heard the term redneck. Well, their necks got really red, and their hair stood up when this guy said that he was going to take charge of their lands. In Texas, people like their lands, especially private landowners. About 97% of the land in Texas is privately owned. Now, some states that's different, but we like our land and our guns and Friday night football. We've lost one of the things at Friday night football. Since I'm a preacher, I'm interested in this. We don't get to pray at Friday night football. So we drew the line in the sand. They did that at the Alamo, and we're going to stand with our guns and private lands and Friday night football. But I believe that it's better for private landowners to take care of their land and the endangered species on it than maybe the government buying it and setting it aside. You know, even God put Adam and Eve in the garden to manage it. And you get a private landowner down here in Texas, especially a rancher or a farmer, they love their land. They're going to do a better job than somebody out of the government. And the government really doesn't have the money to send that many people down here. So we believe we can take care of it. And so that's what we're doing with our safe harbor agreement. And, you know, the toad's doing pretty good. And, you know, there's some really good side benefits. If you, by the way, I heard Dr. Day talk about the word amphibian, and toads need water.
Right.
And it gets dry down here in Texas sometimes. So dry they don't even come out some years. But we did a little deal. We built a ditch from our creek over to a lowland, and we have a wetland now that it does dry up in the summertime, but they're hibernating in the summer anyway. They do it opposite from, I guess, what bears do. They come out in the winter and spring, and then they go away somewhere in the sand deep and make it through the Texas summer. But when it floods down here, our creek flows into our wetland, and we got a nice little wetland. And the good part about that wetland, it's not just a toad pond. It's a good duck pond now. And we like to hunt ducks. And you know, one of the benefits of having toads is to have ducks. And deer and turkeys and other birds. So we've got some benefits because we built this wetland, and so the toad's not hurting us. Like I told you earlier, now if it was an 800-pound gorilla, we might not love it as much as we love the toad.
So whose idea was the channel? Did the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service say, hey, you need to dig a channel, or did Bob Long decide he needed to dig a channel?
No. You know, there's people that sit in the office at U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and then there's some of them that come out and talk to you. And we have a fellow that lives from in the area. He came from Dimebox. You probably don't know where Dimebox is, but he grew up in Dimebox, Texas, and he came out and suggested we dig this channel from our creek for flood times to fill our wetland, and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a lot of floods, but when we do, it works. And so every other year or so, we have a great duck pond. And so that's one of the benefits is what I was saying. You know, you don't know what benefits you you're going to have when they tell you you're going to have to do something for the toad or the some fly or a gorilla. But
yeah.
We're getting along well with the toad. We started off contentious, but now the Austin paper put out to say that I'm the savior of the toad. It says, let's see what it's saying. Conservative minister assumes role of toad savior. Now, my congregation thought that I ought to pay more attention to the sheep, but we're taking care of the toad and the sheep, too.
Well, I think that's just magnificent, Bob. I think that's, and of course, the wetlands, that is, you're just creating a wildlife magnet. So, like you said, the ducks come in now and the turkeys. And you said, though, that back here, now, you haven't had an opportunity to see the toads in a while because they're nocturnal, and your interest in going back into these wetlands at night just isn't there, huh?
No. There's a doctor over at Texas State that comes out sometimes. He doesn't like it too much either. He sends his graduate students mostly,
mm-hmm.
and they come out and count the toads or how many of them call. And my son and my grandson have gone out more than I have, but there's a tendency for where there's water, we have a snake called a water moccasin.
Yes,
and
sir.
They could be swimming out in that water, and I really don't, you know, I saw a picture where you or Dr. Day are holding a snake, but
right.
It probably is a dead snake, isn't it, or is it alive?
No, that's a live snake. I love snakes. I've worked with poisonous snakes for over 30 years.
Oh, my. But we don't handle them down here.
You don't?
We're not snake handlers down here.
Oh, my Lord.
And,
oh, yes.
I think that snakes do have a good purpose, but I just, usually it's kind of a dead snake if it comes to my house. That may mess up your show, but
no,
it's the truth. You got to tell the truth, you know.
That's right, especially with your ministry, and you are a minister. So that's, you know, for you to lead us astray would be wrong. Well, I have to tell you this very quick story before we go to break. We were down in Ohio once, and believe it or not, Bob, we would go back into these rural areas, and these people would collect snakes for us. I would go down there with a science teacher, and they'd keep them alive in 55-gallon drums. And we went down there one time, and literally they had a 55-gallon drum half-filled with copperheads. Now, are you familiar with the copperhead?
Mm-hmm.
And what we had found out is one of those good old boys, they were taking big log chains and pulling these huge rocks with their cars and these dens, and they collected, oh gosh, there had to be 300 or 400 snakes there. So I asked them, I said, what are you guys going to do with them? And they said, well, the leather guys will be around here in a little bit, we'll sell them to them. Well, I, you know, being a fan of snakes, and I actually, believe it or not, I know it's hard to even imagine. I actually like snakes and have kept different snakes in captivity forever. So I asked him, I said, what would you want for each snake if I was to buy them from you? And he said, we would have to have at least 25 cents apiece. So I bought probably, I bought at least 100. But I would have. And Bob, we took them about 10 miles down the road and returned them to their natural habitat.
Okay.
Now, they would probably ship me out of Texas if that happened.
Well, we don't have the problem that they have down in Florida with big snakes, you know.
No, we have a big problem.
Because we have our guns here, too.
Well, I've told the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, you know, they have that problem with the pythons. I said it's real simple to solve because, you know, of course, they're not indigenous to the Everglades, and it is a problem. It's simply put a bounty on them. I mean, and right away, that problem will be solved because anything we've ever put a bounty on, it usually takes care of overpopulation problems, hands down. It's happened forever. Well, we're going to be back with Bob Long. He's got a lot more tales from Texas to to entertain us with and also educate us at the same time. What a fantastic guest. This is Larry Batson. We're going to take a few moments here for a few public service announcements. And you're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World All Around the World on Blog Talk Radio.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Pat Green. The blood supply is at critically low levels, and you can help. Call the American Red Cross at 1-800-GIVE-LIFE. That's 1-800-GIVE-LIFE to schedule your appointment to donate blood. Your donation is critical because every 2 seconds someone in America needs blood. That's accident victims, surgical candidates, and cancer patients, just to name a few. Please donate blood and encourage your friends, family, and neighbors to give too. Please call the American Red Cross at 1-800-GIVE-LIFE or visit givelife.org to make your appointment. Thank you.
Take me fishing and show me how to drive the boat.
Take me fishing so I can tell you what a great dad you've been.
Take someone you love out on the water and see where the water takes you.
Take me fishing because I miss my boy.
Rediscover the joy of boating and fishing. Get information and get going at takemefishing.org.
This week's episode, Bobcat in the Cave.
Gosh, Johnny, playing in the cave sure is neat.
Oh, boy, a kitty cat.
Sassy, the kitty cat's yelling.
What, Sassy? It's not a kitty? It's a bobcat? Speaking of cats, do you like to stress the importance of adopting cats from animal shelters? Over 5 million cats go into animal shelters every year? And with millions of healthy cats to choose from, it's a shame more people don't adopt from shelters.
This bobcat, heavy. Help, Sassy!
Why bother? We'll just get into more trouble tomorrow?
What's that supposed to mean? Oh, nuts.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Here's a hot topic about our wildland. Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
What I was getting ready to say. We'd like to thank the Weimers up at We Want You Cottages, and their website is wewantyou.com, WEWANCHU.com, and their number is 716-789-3383. Also, McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful God's Country, SS Park, Colorado, right on the boundaries of Rocky Mountain National Park. Go to their website, info@McGregorMountainLodge.com, or that 800 number, 1-800-835-8439. Santee Cooper Country in beautiful South Carolina. Hey, if you want to go fishing, Bob, have you ever been fishing in South Carolina? I think we lost him. Well, it's fantastic. In fact, there we go. It's beautiful Santee Country in Lake Marion, Lake Moultrie, and on the Santee Cooper Lakes. That website is santeecoopercountry.org. Or call the girls at 1-800-227-8510. And also Scobie Custom Meats and Maple Syrup, 765-653-7119. Dr. Day?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Have we lost Bob Long?
Unfortunately, Larry, I think we did lose Bob. Trying to get it back on the line here. Blog Talk gave us a hiccup and kicked me off the line, and then trying to get reestablished here. So
okay.
Talk amongst yourself. I'll get Bob back on the phone here as soon as I can.
Thank you very much. That's why we have Eric Altman manning the controls over there. We think that unknown sources are bop in on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight we're talking with Bob Long from Bastrop, Texas, and his program that he's been doing with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service called the Safe Harbor Program, and the protection of a very rare amphibian known as the Houston toad. In fact, while Bob has been essential in protecting an important and growing toad population on his land, work has continued away from his property. In recent years, Texas State University, and we were talking about that earlier, has conducted research that has produced valuable information on habitat use, distribution, and density of adult toads in juveniles. Larval survivorship rates, that's a big word, the effects of predation and population genetics. In fact, what Bob has actually done is he raises cattle down on that ranch, but they've created fences to keep the cattle out of where the toads are. And last year, if my research is correct, they had one of the largest population growths of the Houston toad. And as I mentioned moments ago, it was on the brink of extinction. So great efforts by Bob Long down in Bastrop, Texas. Mr. Long has also cut down the size of his herd and continues to rotate grazing patterns. With lots of help from Environmental Defense Fund, he has overseen a series of prescribed burns, and he's also been active in brush removal projects. He's also agreed to plant only native grasses should they need to replant overgrazed pastures arise. And most recently, Bob Long helped build a ditch, and we were talking about that. And that was suggested by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to carry overflow from a creek and actually create these wetlands where the toads, well, that's what they like. You know, they're amphibians. They have to get wet. And, of course, Texas can have some brutally hot summers, so that's always a concern. Did we have any luck with Mr. Long? I guess not. Well, he'll be here, well, you know. I'm sorry.
Well, while we're talking about the toads, let me tell you my Texas toad experiences.
Uh-oh.
I was stationed in the service in El Paso, and I was there for 8 years, I believe, and it didn't get much rain there in El Paso. You get maybe 3 inches a year. And we'd have the rains in the spring, and they'd fill up little washes, little huecos, they call them, little bathtubs of water, basically, and these spadefoot toads would hatch out of the sand, basically. And they would go through their entire life cycle in just a few weeks because, like you said, the heat would dry up the little ponds. In just a matter of a few days, the eggs were laying, the tadpoles hatched out, and within a week or so, they were frogs. Whereas, here, it takes several weeks to go from from an egg to a adult frog.
Well, I've done some. Go ahead,
Larry.
Yes,
we've got Bob back on the program with us.
Fantastic, Bob. What happened? I think it was some folks from Oklahoma that created that problem.
I don't know. I'm not a technician.
I'm not either. That's why we have Eric Altman to grab controls of that Blog Talk Radio. It sometimes happens. That's technology. Absolutely.
We are in a sunspot cycle.
We are in a sunspot cycle.
Well, that could be it.
So, Bob, what meeting occurred when these U.S. Fish and Wildlife people finally got their heads together and realized that they were not going to use strong-arm tactics to take your land and other people's land to save this toad, and they decided to go, I don't know how you want to say it, in the back way, to persuade your thoughts on preserving this endangered species?
Well, the county put together about a 15 to 20 person stakeholder group to help the county deal with the toad problem.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked on this group of private landowners, business leaders, environmentalists, developers, realtors, government officials. But it looked like it's going to take a long time to come up with a county habitat conservation plan, which we just did this year. We just got it this year. We even have a lady full time. We call her the Toad Lady, that takes care of people when they want to build a house. You know how they deal with the toad and how they can get the different things taken care of with the banks and the tax assessor collector, different kind of problems. She's the problem solver if you have toads. But it took us a while, and so I looked for a quicker solution. I didn't have time to sit in those meetings, so with the help of Environmental Defense, my family found out about this safe harbor agreement that we were able to do for a period of 10 years. We're in the midst of that instead of something forever, like for perpetuity. And the safe harbor agreement lets us continue our ranching operations if we make habitat improvements and put in management practices that help the toad. As a matter of fact, our safe harbor agreement allows incidental take. That's, you guys understand that, but not everybody does. That's accidental killing of the toads. If a cow steps on them or a tractor hits it while continuing normal ranching operations, our habitat improvements and management practices outweigh the loss of toads. So we have had an increase of toads in our area because of our management practices, which are putting in the wetland and fencing off the wetland. And we have a pond that has toads, and we fence that off. And during breeding season and for a six-month period, we keep the cows out of those particular areas. We also deal with, brush. We do prescribed burns. We do other habitat improvements and are continually working to benefit. So we've even cut back on our number of cattle, reduced our herd, which always helps. There's more grass.
Right.
Those are the kind of things that we've done. Now, we've had the help of Environmental Defense Fund, which has been a great help to us, and Sand County Foundation, as well as U.S. Fish and Wildlife and Texas Parks and Wildlife. And I wouldn't say we're all real friendly, but we've begun to work together and change attitudes, and because they have to work with private property owners to recover endangered species in Texas, because most of the land is privately owned. And it actually saves money. It's better to do incentives with a rancher and give him some grants and help him improve habitat than have to buy a $1 million piece of property and set it aside for nature to take care of it. So I think it's working pretty good for the toad. I don't know about all the other endangered species in the area, but we have a great template here in Bastrop County, and great for people who are moving in again. People couldn't build houses, couldn't do anything because they didn't know how to deal with the toad, but things are working better now. Since we have the toad lady, she takes care of that.
Well, it's almost like what they dealt with the spotted owl in Oregon, where the timber people couldn't go in those areas where the owl lived. And, you know, that is a fantastic way that people in your community have dealt with this, because it only makes sense, because if the government gets involved with it too much, it's going to cost you and I, the taxpayers, a lot of money. Whereas instead of buying all this land, like you had expressed, just let the private landowners, and they'll do that. Has there been anyone that's not been, let's say, congenial with this program?
Well, everybody's pretty afraid to do it, a large tract.
Mm-hmm.
But they watched what I'm doing, and I'm about 7 years into this, and I'm still kicking, and actually, the incentives, like the wetland and the fencing, they've been able to find some funds. You know, I've had to pay for portions of it, but most of it, there are environmental groups that are willing to help if you're willing to provide the land and the management. And with the help of, like I said, Environmental Defense and U.S. Fish and Wildlife, we've been able to do those kind of things. And right now, we're in the middle of the beginning of hunting season. This is this is bow season for deer hunters, and starting in November is regular hunting season, and there's not anything to hold us back from deer season or turkey season in the spring and duck season in the winter. So there you have it.
Well, and you know, the government's been smart enough to realize that you could be a fantastic spokesman for this whole endeavor because of your speaking skills being a minister and also being able to talk to folks the advantages and why this program they've developed along, you know, let's face it, with your help. I mean, I'm sure that you are the fellow that gave all your fellow ranchers and citizens down there guidance in this and how important it actually was and how it could absolutely help them out. In fact, I was doing some research, and they sent you to Washington, D.C.?
Right. Yes.
What was involved with that?
Well, I just, you know, kind of, they had an eagle up there to show the Senate about the eagle, and they paraded the eagle around, and they paraded me around as a rancher from Texas. And the point was, is both of us were unique, and the eagle's about to, you know, go off the endangered species list, or is off, really.
Uh-huh.
They were talking about that at the time. I'm still endangered. There's only one of me, but I went up there, and they asked me a few questions. But I've traveled with Environmental Defense and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. We went to the first safe harbor agreement, had its 10-year anniversary. I went over to Pinehurst, and I didn't know that was a golf course, North Carolina, but I found that out. They had the Caucasian woodpecker there, and it had been under safe harbor 10 years. And, of course, I went in. They had a picture of me on the wall. First time I'd seen a life-size picture of me, and I think I was a dignitary. Then we went just this year in February. My wife and I went out to Portland, Oregon to a big conference of U.S. Fish and Wildlife personnel, and I just told them about what we've been doing on our place, and they asked questions. And I told them I'd be glad to travel if I could fit it in my schedule if they buy my food and pay for my airplane ticket.
Well, that's the least they can do. But, you know, I've worked for the U.S. Well, I think they should give you a fee as well.
Oh, really? I didn't get that.
Oh, no, sir. No,
I'm just glad to get something to eat and a place to stay.
Well, I can see that, but it's your very valuable time. We work with quite a bit with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. In fact, here in 2 weeks, I'm going to be going to Shepherdstown, West Virginia at the National Conservation Training Center in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. Have you ever been there?
No.
Well,
I've only been to about three or four places. I haven't been back, so I may not have. My welcome may not be out, but I seem to have a pretty good relationship with them, and they keep putting me in their little magazines. I keep seeing my picture.
Yeah.
It's an old picture. I've lost a little weight since this last picture, but that's, you know, ought to do that.
Well, the picture I've been observing here tonight is you're in your coveralls with your fine-looking cowboy hat, and I can't tell what's behind it here, but the photograph's courtesy of the Long family, so you should be familiar with it, if you know the one I'm talking about. But you mentioned,
I'm looking at another one, but that's all right.
So
we have.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Well, there's not much else I can say except we're still working on our habitat improvement and management. We've built enough relationship that we're even considering what's called a conservation easement, so that my kids and grandkids won't sell off our property down the road, because the heritage is pretty great for not only cattle but for wildlife. And so we're in the middle of conservation easement work with Texas Parks and Wildlife. They surround us anyway, and hopefully we can work that out.
Well, it must make you feel fantastic to know that this program that you've helped develop along with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and also the land that you've worked your entire life for and you've loved so much, is going to be there for many, many years to come. Basically, because of one little toad that you hardly ever see, that's right now, as you mentioned, will be preparing to come out of their hibernation for the summer. It's really kind of a unique relationship, I would have to say. Very unique.
Well, that's for sure.
So have you been able to, I'll ask you this, Bob, have you been able to put the Houston toad in some of your sermons that you've delivered to your ministry?
It's really kind of hard, but I'm thinking about it. I bring it up every once in a while when it just strikes me right, but it just doesn't seem to fit into the overall message usually. But everybody knows that I am involved with the Houston Toad. Matter of fact, our management practice has got us the state's Lone Star Land Steward Award last year, so we feel like we're doing the best we can, and somebody at the state level at least recognized that, and we're continuing our cow and calf operation. And right now, we got lots of grass, and the cattle look good, and we're, like I said, we're moving into deer season, so things are good. We have a state official that was the agriculture commissioner, is now the comptroller, that is working on economic initiatives with endangered species. In other words, helping the landowners do some things to use that endangered species as a way to gain funds, maybe bird watching, or I guess you could toad watch. Have midnight toad watching and so forth, but down here in Texas, we believe in, you know, looking at the economic part of it. We still like to make money, and we kind of like that in Texas. And if we can make some money off the Houston toad, or we can improve our land enough, we can, you know, have people come hunt deer or duck. Or turkey. It's not a bad deal.
No, it's not a bad. I can see it right now. I can see T-shirts. I can see, you know, these folks spend tens of thousands of dollars to go to Uganda, Africa to observe gorillas. I see no reason why tourists would not go to Bastrop, Texas to observe the Houston toad.
Well, they already, the Chamber of Commerce is already working on things like that. They got a toad trot and two or three other toad functions. Not that they've seen any, but they want to use it.
Absolutely.
More power to them.
I can see right now, Bob, a Bob Long Toad Festival.
when Gail Norton was Secretary Department of the Interior, she said that she quoted me, and I never remembered saying what I said. The people, that's the only problem getting on radio and stuff, is, quote, she said, he says we're wildlifing it all over the place, and we're happy to do it. So I guess I must have made that quote, or she wouldn't have quoted me.
Well, I'm absolutely sure, but you know that tonight's program, it'll be on for eternity because of the wonders of the Internet and what they call iPods. So people can download this program and covet your words for many, many years to come. So
that's scary.
That is very, very scary. I think about that every time I listen to the Wild World News with Dr. Day, that tens of thousands of folks will have a chance to listen to this, as well as our listeners in New Zealand and Ireland and England and all across North America. And I know our good friend Slade Monk down in Alabama, who listens to our program each week. What a fantastic guest, Bob. Wow, this is, I totally commend you for this effort and this program that you've developed. This is absolutely fantastic. I definitely think it's a template for landowners all across the country, not only the Houston toad, but other endangered species. I mean, and would it be all right if people that might listen might contact you and to get some insight on it, maybe programs they want to develop in their areas?
That's kind of dangerous, isn't it? But I'm willing. I'm kind of forgetting that if we can get the endangered species and bring them back from the brink of extinction, we can delist them, and they don't cost us money. I like to save money because I pay taxes, and I'm paying for this toad through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
That's right. Well, we all are.
Having it on my place. Yeah, there you go.
And you know there's you work with the folks that are paid a salary just to work with you and the preservation of this toad. So
I'm a conservative conservationist.
That's right.
Whatever that means.
I understand completely. Well, it's been a real pleasure to have Bob along from Bastrop, Texas, here with us tonight. We want to tell everybody about what's coming up in the next few weeks. Next week on our program, are you a veteran, Bob?
Yes, I am.
Well, we're going to have a gentleman, Mark Kitchell, on. He's a Purple Heart recipient, three tours of Vietnam. And he's going to talk about, he said that when they came back from that war that no one wanted to talk about it. And I said, we're going to have a whole hour to do just that. He's going to tell us about some of the wildlife he ran into and also some of the good things that happened in that conflict and some of the things he experienced. So we feel quite honored to have one of America's heroes, along with Bob Long, on our show, and he'll be with us next week. The week after, something a little bit different, everybody, for you music fans, from music director of Meatloaf and Utopia and the Todd Rundgren Band, Chasm Salton will be calling us from New York, and we're going to chat a little bit about music. One of my music heroes. And he'll be on the 21st, and the week after that on the 28th, world-renowned animal trainer Doug Seuss, who trained for films and television, Bart the Bear and his squadron of grizzly bears that he works with on his ranch in Utah. So we're looking forward to Doug Seuss being on the program. That'll be the last Thursday of the month. And, Bob, God bless you, buddy. I just think this is just fabulous what you do, and we want to keep up to date on it. So I'll tell you what, I'll bend your ear every once in a while to find out the latest developments because I know my listeners want to know everything that's going on in Bastrop, Texas.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. We had a good time.
We had a great time. And, folks, don't forget, we're here every Thursday night, 10 to 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. This is Blog Talk Radio. This is Larry Batson, and you've been listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Larry Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.